Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome for the first time. So, Easter Monday, 1916, that was when the Easter Rising kicked off in Dublin. It was the 24th of April, a very, very late Easter that year. Okay, today's the 21st of April, so not quite the day, but it's always marked on the Easter Monday. Actually, a lot of commemorations take place on the Sunday, even though the fighting started on Monday, and obviously Easter can be in March even. Anyhow, back in 1916, the whole of Ireland was part of the United Kingdom, and people often misleading say, oh, against British rule, almost as though Irish people are not British. Now, it's true that in the Republic of Ireland, most people are not British citizens, but we're British in almost every other way, and even if you don't accept that we are British now, we certainly were British at the time, citizens of the United Kingdom and so on, as well as subjects of the empire. Subject wasn't anyway appropriate. English, Welsh, Scots people were subjects just as we were at the time. The context is vital. It was during the First World War. So as most of the army was away in France and Belgium and so forth, fighting against the Central Powers, there weren't that many soldiers in Ireland. And that's why the Irish Republican Brotherhood, this illegal terrorist organization, trying to destroy democracy throughout the United Kingdom, was in cahoots with the Second Reich. And they'd even talked about would Kaiser Wilhelm II's youngest son, Prince Joachim, come as King of Ireland. But actually, eventually, they decided to go for a Republican program. And so there's the Irish Volunteers, which existed openly, was a lawful organization, wanted home rule for Ireland within the United Kingdom, that they joined in this. There was meant to be a shipment of weapons from Germany. Roger Casement had gone over there, a man who'd sworn loyalty to the king, who'd indeed been a British diplomat in Brazil and in the Congo Free State, who'd been knighted. And then Sir Roger turned traitor and tried to bring the weapons into Kerry. But that ship, Ord, was intercepted. He got ashore, was arrested. So as the shipment of German Mausers didn't come in, The order was to cancel the rising. Some of the IRB sent to go ahead with it. It was a complete cock-up. So the cancellate order was cancelled. Anyway, so obviously the Irish Volunteers had got some weapons in July 1914, just before the First World War began. Remember, firearms regulations were very lax back then. I don't think it required a license or anything like that. And the Irish Volunteers have been parading openly in Dublin until 1916 in their uniforms with their weapons. That was illegal, but the authorities had chosen not to enforce the law, just to let it drift, because they thought, that might cause conflict. Obviously, there was the Ulster Volunteer Force in the north, and they brought in weapons in March 1914, committed some crimes in doing so, like cutting telephone wires, even kidnapping police officers for a few hours. But the UVF, they wanted to keep Ulster out of any home rule arrangement. And the UVF had completely thrown their weight behind the government in the First World War, whereas the Irish Volunteers were more divided. Some home rule politicians had said, we'll fight for the United Kingdom, which were part. Anyway, it was a complete defeat for the Irish Volunteers. The Irish Volunteers, some started calling themselves the Irish Republican Army, or IRA, hoisting the Irish tricolour above the General Post Office in Dublin. They seized that as it was the nerve centre of communications, okay, for letters, but also for telegrams. But they failed to seize the telephone exchange, which is an even more important nexus. They didn't think about that. I know there are only a few hundred telephones in Ireland at the time. It's hard to believe now. We're talking landlines. This is long before mobile phones were thought of. But nevertheless, the army could call from reinforcements in Great Britain and so forth. So there were some small actions outside Dublin. In North County Dublin, there was some sort of a guerrilla activity against the Royal Irish Constabulary. That was police that was fairly successful for the Irish Volunteers, and a tiny bit of fighting in Galway, Wexford, in Cork. It was the what were those four brothers? Were they called the Kent brothers? Their house was surrounded by the Royal Irish Constabulary. An RIC man was shot dead. The Kent brothers eventually surrendered. One of them made a break for it and was shot dead, trying to run away. But anyway, after 6 days, the Irish Volunteers were defeated. They were surrounded. They'd seized a ring of buildings hoping that an insurrection would spread. Someone said, "We're going out to be slaughtered." Was it James Connolly? But they went ahead anyway. So hundreds of people got killed. A lot of civilians got killed, and so on. And it was all their fault. They had no lawful authority to do so. Patrick Kenny Pierce had the temerity to proclaim himself president of the Irish Republic. Well, he only controlled a few square hectares for 6 days. That was the end of him. And people like the O'Rahilly, who said, "Well, okay, this is cancelled." He'd driven around Dublin handing out cancellation orders, and then it was going ahead anyway. He decided to go ahead anyway. Just think, Patrick Pearce, when he's going out in his uniform to start the conflict, which for some people hasn't ended 100 years later, his sister saying, "Come home and forget all this foolishness." And he could have done it and carried on running his school, St. Enda's. He was apparently quite a good teacher, barrister, fairly dreadful poet. And we never would have heard of him. But he went ahead, and then he obviously got executed sometime later. Think about Joseph Mary Plunkett, who knew he was dying of tuberculosis. But had he not done that, nobody would have heard of him. And obviously, Pierce is an icon for many. So they're very easily surrounded and defeated. So perhaps it was a moronic plan. So it was a splendiferous victory for the Crown forces, over 100% casualties inflicted on the other side. That proclamation, the Irish Republic saying, alluding to gallant allies in Europe, that meant the Germans, Austro-Hungarians, the Bulgarians, the Ottomans, and so on. So that was obviously high treason at time of war. People were court-martialed, about 100 sentenced to death. In the end, only, I think, 14 of those sentenced to death that way were executed. Roger Casement was brought to London, tried at the Old Bailey, and found guilty for high treason. And the that guy, Kent, was court-martialed in Cork, executed by firing squad. So Casement was the only one who was hanged. The others were executed by firing squad. Now, I'm not in favour of the death penalty. In those days, the death penalty was popular, was widely accepted, particularly for a crime like this. So you mustn't deliberately kill people. But if you do, then surely that's murder. I mean, this is treason, taking the side of an enemy country in the time of a time of war, and so on. So if it was ever justified, you think it's justified in this case. And you can see just how humane and merciful the United Kingdom is to execute such a small percentage of those sentenced to death. The great majority had it commuted to life imprisonment, most of them released within a year. And other sentences of penal servitude for life or lesser sentences and so on. So very, very clement indeed. So civilians killed by both sides, which is obviously shocking. Some soldiers murdering civilians. And like Sheehy Skeffington, a well-known Dublin radical, eccentric, and indeed pacifist. Some of the denizens of Dublin took the opportunity to loot because the RIC were off the streets for a few days. So that was it. They say that stringing out the executions over several days was a big mistake. Maybe do it all at once with a greater impact on the public without generating so much sympathy. Within 6 weeks of the Easter Rising, there was a demonstration in sympathy of them. They're held in Frongoch camp, the people who committed this crime of the Easter Rising. Now, yeah, I'm not a pacifist, but obviously you think of St. Augustine's rules of a just war. You must have rightful authority to do this. Do this as a last resort. It must have a good chance of success. The Irish Volunteers knew had no chance of success. Very few people would have thought that within 5 years, the major portion of Ireland would leave the United Kingdom. I mean, obviously, we now know that 33 years later, the major portion of Ireland became a republic. That was it. So these days, Sinn Féin, which obviously starts as a Republican Party, claims a legacy of 1916, and they hold their commemorations. And then there's the dissident Republicans going around with like balaclavas, mask faces, to be as menacing as possible because they're pro-terrorists. They want to terrorize anyone who believes in democracy. And what else is there? So Mary Lou McDonald, who's the leader of the Sinn Féin party, her giving a speech how that unification's for everyone. We had unity. It's Republicans who destroyed that. The whole of Ireland was united until 1921. Anyway, so you see just how willfully ignorant she is. So this is completely ahistorical claim she's making. And then she makes this partisan speech about why her party's the best when it's supposedly for everyone. So you can see how it's not for everyone. And the importance of Irish language rights, an oration that she delivered in English. If the Irish language is so important, speak Irish like all the time, which she doesn't. You know, in the Republic of Ireland, we've had over 100 years to bring Irish back as the lingua franca. And the number of people who speak Irish as their first language has declined in both real and absolute terms. So it's imbecilic. I don't need the Irish language to be Irish. I am Irish, even though I cannot speak Irish. Now, I'm not against speaking Irish. Knowledge is better than ignorance. People want to learn it. People want to be bilingual, speak it all the time. There's no skin off mice now. You do what you want. People studying in school, fine. Should it be a compulsory subject all the way up to leaving certificate? I mean, I think not. There are those who disagree. I don't mind the signs everywhere. Republic of Ireland is a bit of a waste. It's fine. But the Northern Ireland is a bit of a waste of money to bother putting the signs in a language that only about 2% of people can speak, and not even fluently in most cases. More people in Northern Ireland can speak French or Polish or something, and so on. So you can see how it's misused to this day. And obviously, their governmental commemorations and the president lays a wreath, and the Irish Defence Forces are parading there and so on. So yes, I wish it never happened. I wish the First World War had never happened. So it was a very sad legacy. We could have remained part of the United Kingdom, had Home Rule. The Home Rule Bill had already been passed, already been signed by King George V. It was just suspended because of the First World War. So it all goes back to the First World War. And the Home Rule was actually enacted, I mean, in Southern Ireland and I suppose in Northern Ireland as well. So the Home Rule Parliament of Southern Ireland met in May 1921 in Dublin. The only people showed up were the Unionists, about six of them, representing Trinity College Dublin. Remember, if you had a degree, you had an extra vote in those days. Vote for your constituency where you live and vote for your university. So you had two votes, and only about 1% of the population were graduates in those days. But it was really a damp squib, the Home Rule Parliament of Southern Ireland. Right. Well, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Don't do PayPal, georgecalland79@gmail.com. And whatever. God save the Queen. God save the King, as it is now. And Ireland is British.